Welcome to the Conservative Thought Hour, where America always comes first.
I'm proud to be an American.
Each week, we bring you captivating guests who will speak on many topics of national interest. We are not interested in telling you what to think or how to think. We have faith that you can do that for yourself. Our interest is to bring you information to help you form your own opinions. As always, the views expressed by our guests are their own and are not necessarily shared by the host or the station you are listening to. Get ready for enlightenment with the Conservative Thought Hour.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
And now, here are your hosts, Carrie Black and Rick Stannard.
So happy to have Dr. Bonner Cohen as our guest. He is a senior fellow at the National Center for Public Policy Research, where he concentrates on energy, natural resources, international relations. He also serves as a senior policy advisor with the Heartland Institute, senior policy analyst with a committee for a constructive tomorrow, and also he's an adjunct scholar at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Articles by Dr. Cohen have appeared in the Wall Street Journal, Forbes, Investors Business Daily, New York Post, Washington Times, the National Review, too many to mention. And Rick, I know you're excited about this interview. I am too. Good morning, Dr. Cohen. Thanks for being here.
Well, good morning, and I'm delighted to be here.
Well, Dr. Cohen, I've got to start this off with the question that's just been burning in my mind ever since I saw the hints of this, and that's the executive order number 14008, which is, a hidden key to something called 3030. Can you tell us what this is and why this is a concern?
Yes, I certainly can. On January the 27th, President Biden, 7 days after he was sworn in, issued an executive order. Like all such executive orders, it had a very fancy title. This was about dealing with climate change, restoring scientific integrity to the federal government, and blah, blah, blah. Tucked into that executive order was a plan to, quote unquote, protect 30% of America's lands and water by the year 2030. And this is now known as the 30 by 30 plan. Now, what is meant by this? This means that the Biden administration, through hook or crook, probably more the latter than the former, will aim to get 30% of the nation's lands and waters, make that off limits to any kind of development whatsoever. That includes not just federal land, the vast majority of which is located west of the Mississippi River in the far west, places like Nevada, Idaho, Utah, and what have you, but also private land. Now, there are several ways they can go about this, and they have been very, very vague about how they will do this, because I don't think they want, at this point, to let the cat out of the bag. But this can be done through regulatory means, through enhanced use of the Endangered Species Act, for instance, through enhanced use of the reintroduction of an Obama policy called Waters of the United States. It essentially imposes federal zoning on millions upon millions of acres of private land across the country in the name of protecting waters on or near that land, but it's actually federal zoning. The water protection of that are simply window dressing. And there are other ways, regulatory policies that can be put into place that restrict the use of land, but when we're talking about private land, will also slap restrictions on the use of private property. In other words, your property rights are going to be, putting it mildly, called into question through federal policy. Now, there are going to be all sorts of justifications for this. First and foremost will be are combating climate change, because under the guise of combating climate change, you can do or try to do all sorts of things that will ultimately result in power being put into the hands of unaccountable and unelected bureaucrats in Washington, telling you what you can and cannot do with your own land, and what your business can and cannot do, all in the name of combating climate change. This is an astounding proposal, extremely ambitious. You don't hear a lot about it. It has flown under the radar screen, but it is something to be taken deadly seriously, because ultimately it's going to put the federal government in the business of telling you how to run your property, how to run your business, and it's going to lead to even more federal either outright ownership of land or federal control of land.
Wow.
That, in a nutshell, is the bad news I have to deliver.
That is just breathtaking. And that's, you're not talking about eminent domain. I didn't hear those words.
Oh, no. That's chicken feed. Yeah, that's something you can do if you want to build a highway or something like that. Oh, no. This is either the government buying up more and more private property, or through regulatory means, driving people off their land, forcing them to become quote unquote willing sellers. Or it's a matter of simply putting federal government in charge in a regulatory fashion on how you use your property. And this is, of course, the first people you think about here are farmers, ranchers, fruit growers, of which you have quite a few in Florida, and but it's ultimately going to affect everyone. That if you have property, and if the government decides that your property is to be included in 30 by 30, and let's keep something in mind, read the executive order carefully. It doesn't just say 30 by 30, it says at least 30% by the year 2030. So what's the logical follow-on to that? 40 by 40 or 50 by 50? Because once these things go into place, they take on a momentum all their own. They are codified, they're there, and the bureaucrats who will eventually replace the current bureaucrats who administer the program, they're going to see a way to aggrandize their own power, to increase their own little regulatory empires. And so what will that do? Well, you're going to see the program expand in the decades to come.
Well, my mind is just spinning with questions. I mean, this is so scary. Yeah, I have followed the government's efforts at climate control, but this is nothing to do with climate control. This is everything to do with controlling lives.
Right.
Wow.
Of course, a lot of what is being done in the name of climate control also controls lives. they justify just about everything they're doing now in the name of combating climate change. Which is a whole separate issue, and by the way, a very phony one. But we could get to that in a few minutes. But
we're going to have a few scientists on in the next few weeks talking about whether the polar bear is an endangered species or not.
It's not by any stretch of the imagination. They're doing quite well, thank you.
Yeah. Well, let me ask a very simple question: how much land does the federal government now hold sway over?
Okay, that's a great question, because a lot of people, particularly back here in the eastern part of the United States, don't really appreciate this. But the federal government owns, if from a constitutional perspective, you think the federal government can own anything, but it has under its direct jurisdiction right at 30% already, something like 27%. Now, that includes everything from national parks, national recreation areas, wildlife areas, but the biggest chunk of that is run by the Department of Interior's Bureau of Land Management, BLM. And they own millions and millions of acres, primarily in the western part of the United States. There are states out west, Nevada, 83% of the land in Nevada is owned by Uncle Sam. In Idaho, it's about 63%, about 62-63% in Wyoming. And I'll tell you something, you do not want the federal government as your next door neighbor, because once the feds own land, they gradually take control in one fashion or another on over adjacent land, because your property borders federal property, and whatever you're doing on your property can be said to affect what's going on in an environmental or in other way on federal property. Therefore, you must cease and desist immediately. To believe me, federal control of land is a very bad thing. And by the way, it pauperizes rural counties. How? Well, there is no tax base. If the federal government owns the land, how can a county raise funds for road repairs, bridge repairs, schools, and the like? Well, the fact of the matter is they can't. And so what widespread federal ownership of land does, aside from putting all sorts of natural resources, in many cases completely off limits, but it also greatly impairs the abilities of local government to raise money, because they do that on property taxes. Well, you can't raise property taxes when the government owns most of the land. So this is something people here in the East don't really appreciate. But if you spent enough time in the West, you will come to appreciate just the kinds of problems that arise through widespread federal ownership of land. Under the Biden 30 by 30 plan, that is only going to increase. But what is currently going on out west, that's going to gradually come here in the East, either through out-and-out ownership or through regulatory means, because the name of the game is to quote-unquote protect the land. But their definition of protection means restrict what you can do on your own private property.
Well, this reminds me of what Russia went through with their farmers when they tried their first stab at a controlled economy, and they told the farmers what they could grow and when, and they ended up starving hundreds of millions of people.
Oh, yes. That was done under a comrade Stalin in the early 1930s. And they picked out the most productive part of the old Soviet Union, which was Ukraine. It was very similar to our Midwest as far as having fertile soil and all of that. And what they did is they drove the most productive farmers off the land. They starved many of them, and this was public policy. They did this on purpose, and they collectivized the land, and with the result that millions and millions of people starved to death, and they starved to death because the Soviet Union destroyed the agricultural sector of its own country with the very predictable result.
Well, I can just picture some bureaucrat telling a farmer that he has to plant wheat in his cornfield or cotton in his cornfield.
Right.
And you know, Michael Bloomberg lost a nomination for an idiot statement about farming being simple.
Yes. Yeah, I wonder how much time Mr. Bloomberg has ever spent on a farm.
Yeah. I don't think he's ever driven by one. He may have flown over.
At the very most, he's driven by one, right?
Yeah. Oh, golly. Well, this is scary because, you know, our entire supply chain has been destroyed by the pandemic. And everything that we do in a free market economy is entirely sensitive to everything else. And you cannot destroy one little area without having major impact across the entire economy.
That's absolutely right. And there, people may be asking themselves, where in the world did the idea of 30 by 30 come from? Well, it came from something that arose around 30 years ago, and it was called the Wildlands Project. And this is something from the world of deep ecology, where dedicated, hardcore environmentalists decided, in their infinite wisdom, that we needed to return tremendous swaths of North America back to its, what they would have us believe was its original state. That is, separate people from land, establish wildlife corridors from the Rio Grande all the way into Canada, going north and south and east and west, enabling wildlife to pass through areas without coming into contact with any human beings whatsoever. To make that happen, human beings were to be systematically removed from those wildlife corridors and ultimately herded into cities. Well, this sounds bizarre and crazy, and in fact, it is. That idea has now been incorporated, dressed up a little bit, but it's essentially the same thought in the Biden 30 by 30 project, because it's being pushed in no small way by the same kind of environmental activists who are now Biden's political appointees and a whole host of federal agencies. These people do not consider human beings to be a part of nature. And for them, separating people from nature is something that is only too normal for them. They refuse to realize that, of course, we're a part of nature. But no, that's not what this is all about. They're interested in control, and they are absolutely going to pursue in one form or another the whole idea of creating corridors throughout the country. Example, if you delve into the literature of those supporting the Biden 30 by 30 plan, you will find that one of the groups supporting this wants to reintroduce the jaguar into southwestern United States, specifically in New Mexico, in the mountains of New Mexico and Arizona. Well, if you introduce jaguars to those areas, what is going to happen? Well, first of all, the people are going to get out because jaguars are much larger than mountain lions, and they will become the apex predators there. And this is a splendid way of driving people off land because these animals, beautiful and fascinating as they may be, they are wild animals. And they are opportunists, and they will eat whatever crosses their path. So if you look at the literature of some of these people, they want to reintroduce jaguars into mountain areas of, as I said, New Mexico and Arizona. Well, if they'll do that, think of what they will do elsewhere. All of this is serving their goal to, and this is the verb they use, rewild the United States, to rewild rural areas. And if farmers and ranchers don't like it, well, that's too bad, because because this is all being done in the name of saving the planet and combating climate change.
Well, let me ask a really dumb question, I guess. If they want these vast tracts of land returned to pre-human condition, and if they want to allow creatures to migrate from tract to tract without coming across humans, what's going to happen to our roads and railroads? Are we going to abandon them?
There will be, of course, compromises that they'll have to make. For instance, what I've just outlined, that's probably not going to be imposed in the Corn Belt and the places in the Midwest, because that will shut down the nation's agriculture completely. These are, let's face it, majority of them are commodity farmers. They have enough muscle in Washington, D.C. to be protected from this. The same is true with railroads, interstate highways, things like that. If they go too far, then they're going to encounter a lot of resistance. So they will go to the path of least resistance, and they will go after smaller landowners, smaller farmers, smaller ranchers, simply because they're a more attractive prey. They will have a difficult time defending themselves. They will have to hire lawyers. They may not have the money to do that. They don't have powerful farm groups behind them that can keep government bureaucrats at bay. So that's what they do. You always attack the weakest link.
I guess Bill Gates is the biggest farm owner now in this country.
And he doesn't have to worry about a thing.
No.
They're not going to go after Bill.
No. Well, isn't this illegal? I mean, what happened to federalism?
Yeah.
What happened to states' rights and the 10th Amendment?
Once all of this is put into motion, and right now, a Biden administration, political appointees, and federal bureaucrats are devising plans for how they want to do this, they are going to encounter a lot of resistance. Because, as you correctly pointed out, this raises all sorts of constitutional questions. By what authority will the federal government impose the 30 by 30 scheme? And so that the big chunks of this are going to wind up in the court system, which is, you know, clogged up enough as it is. Well, it's going to be clogged up even more. But we have no choice, because that's one of the ways to fight this thing. So, yes, it raises all sorts of constitutional issues. And a lot of this stuff is going to wind up being settled one way or another in courts.
Well, I have such a hard time believing where we're going as a country. And what we're seeing with this executive order is barely a scratch on what's around the corner.
Mm. That's true.
That's exactly right.
Is it legal what they're trying to do? And I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. Are you a lawyer?
No, I'm not. No.
Well, it's probably unfair to talk legalities, but I think we have to. First and foremost, in my mind, is an executive order is not law.
That's exactly right. And the one quote-unquote good thing about an executive order is any successor to Mr. Biden who does not like this monstrosity that he unveiled in January, the 30 by 30 plan, can do away with it instantly through an executive order that rescinds it. In the meantime, the only means at our disposal are lawsuits against not so much the executive order itself, although you can do that too, but against the policies being implemented to make the 30 by 30 plan a reality. And believe me, those lawsuits will be coming one after the other.
Well, there are 26 red states and 24 blue states. So there's enough, there are enough red states to keep the courts locked up forever on this.
That's right. There's sometimes a clogged court system can be a benefit.
No news is good news.
Right.
Wow. Well, where is all this going? I'm always suspicious of the government, especially when it's a leftist government. And please forgive me, I've got to say what I think about this. There is no such thing as a Democrat anymore. There's no such thing as a socialist or a communist or a progressive. They're all one. And in fact, included in that is the left side of the Republican Party. And so I like to call them PCSD, progressive, communist, socialist, and Democrats.
What we're really facing, and I think we've only begun to realize the extent and the power of the forces arrayed against us, is a ruling class centered not just in Washington, D.C., but one that has taken over our nation's universities, foundations, big tech, increasingly corporations. Think of how woke the corporations are these days, and not just Silicon Valley, but elsewhere.
The ruling class
takes care of the ruling class. That's what ruling classes do. Elites make sure that elites stay elites. And elites walk all over anyone who gets in their way. It's become fashionable to refer to these things as you know, socialist or communist or what have you. I think that misses the bigger point. The bigger point is we actually have a class of transnational capitalists who are making a tremendous amount of money on the capitalist system, and they're doing so at the expense of those people who are not members of that class. Look at the number of blue-collar jobs that were destroyed in the United States in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s through things like the North American Free Trade Agreement, globalization, and that sort of thing. A lot of people made a lot of money off that, and a lot of people saw their livelihoods destroyed. They weren't destroyed for the reasons that livelihoods had been destroyed in the past, when the automobile replaced the horse and buggy. Well, if you were a buggy manufacturer, you lost out. Or when some other scientific, well, turn back the clock 40 years ago when I was writing my dissertation, I wrote it on a typewriter, okay? The typewriter lost out to something that was far superior. Originally, it was called a word processor. It wound up losing out to the PC. That's one thing. That's just technological innovation progress. That's fine. But if you are rigging a system so that those in power can keep themselves in power by outsourcing jobs to poorer countries, throwing tens of millions of Americans out of work, creating the Rust Belt. The Rust Belt didn't happen organically. It took place as a result of policies that were implemented in Washington and spread throughout the country. That's really this monolith that we're finding ourselves up against today. The ruling class is very comfortable with what is going on in the country today. And these are the people who dream up schemes like the one we just talked about, 30 by 30. These are the people pushing all sorts of measures to be taken to combat climate change, which is actually a fantastically phony issue. The term climate change is redundant. Climates always change. They've been changing ever since the world was created. They're going to continue, 4.5 billion years ago. This is a planet that has seen, over the past 2 million years, 17 ice ages, which means on 17 different occasions, the world cooled off so much that we had giant sheets of ice that stretched from the North Pole, in some cases as far south as Kentucky. And then on 17 different occasions, for reasons we do not understand, those ice sheets melted, and creating lakes and valleys and what have you. Climates always change, just as the courses of rivers always change. Nature is dynamic. What you see today isn't necessarily what you're going to see tomorrow. It is hubris on an absolutely epic scale for academics, bureaucrats, and politicians to say that they're going to put policies in place that are going to reverse climate change. Not going to happen, folks. But what those policies will do is they will put more power and more money into the hands of people who already have a lot of power and money. Think of the people who are supplying us now with quote-unquote renewable energy, primarily wind and solar. These are intermittent sources of energy that in no way, shape, or form will ever be able to provide enough power for a highly sophisticated society of over 300 million people such as the United States, or for that matter, Europe or Japan or China or any place else. But they can take advantage of tax breaks that have been put in place, all in the name of combating climate change. We are subsidizing these industries because they cannot stand on their own 2 feet. And as a result, we are going to find ourselves in a position in a few years where we're going to have to ration energy because the windmills and the solar panels that are going up and the batteries that are supposed to serve as backup, none of that's going to work. It's all incidentally going to create some tremendous environmental problems. Mm-hmm. What do you do with solar waste? When the solar panels outlive their actually very short life expectancy, they don't recycle well, so they're going to be dumped in landfills by the millions and millions and millions. The same is true of wind turbines. Once they reach the end of their life expectancy, they're going to have to be put down, and they're going to have to be dumped someplace.
Well, do you know there are currently 55,000 defunct windmills just in this country, and there is no plan to take them down. There's no money to take them down. They're standing like old Holland windmills that don't work anymore.
That's right. And the Biden administration, ignoring that completely, now wants to put up wind turbines off the east coast of the U.S., the Gulf Coast of the U.S., and the Pacific Coast. Wind turbines don't work in the ocean any better than they do on land. Yes, wind is more constant there, but those turbines wear out, and they wear out very quickly. This is already happening in Europe. There's a bizarre, crazy situation going on in Europe now. In the North Sea, where Europeans in their infinite wisdom have put up thousands and thousands of wind turbines, the wind has decided it's not going to blow. And so these wind turbines are sitting there idle, producing zero electricity. What has been the result? A tremendous electricity shortage that has hit Britain, Denmark, France, Germany, Spain, and Italy, sending prices for electricity shooting into the sky. this is a preview of what is coming our way as we increase our dependence on intermittent sources of wind and energy, including wind and solar. You can already see this in California with their rolling blackouts and their rolling brownouts. Well, as those policies are implemented nationwide, you're going to see that in Southwest Florida too.
Well, you know, if they really want to have windmills that are constantly turning, they need to put them up in Washington, D.C., because there's a lot of wind being blown there.
That's right.
Well, where is all of this going? I keep asking the question because these people are not idiots. Much as we like to think they are, that's a classic mistake of thought. They're not idiots. What they do is exactly what they want to do for their own reasons. We just don't know the entire set of reasons. So, all right, he goes 30-30, and you can assume he's going to go 40-40 and 50-50. And what is the purpose of that? Is it to turn us all into sharecroppers or peasants?
Probably more the peasant mode. First of all, they don't care about us. Once you understand that, once you understand that the ruling class cares solely about the ruling class, now they will say, yes, we're for the workers, we're for this minority or that minority. In truth of the matter, that's all a big lie. They care about themselves, keeping themselves in power. What they're doing with respect to destroying our energy in this country, of course, this is hubris. They haven't thought this through themselves. They understand part of it. This puts more power and in some cases more money in their pockets. But once it all comes crashing down, and it will come crashing down because what they're trying to do defies the laws of physics, a lot of them will no longer be in power, and it's going to be for someone else to clean up the enormous mess that they have created. But we're not going to transition to a quote-unquote carbon-free economy by pick your date, 2030, 2040, 2050. None of that is going to happen. And the attempt to make it happen will end in disaster, some of which you can already see in California and Europe. Will these people be held accountable? Well, of course not. That's not what happens here any more than the people who are responsible for the recent withdrawal from Afghanistan are going to be held accountable for all the mistakes that they made. That in Washington is about many things. It is not about accountability. It doesn't happen. Every now and then there'll be a sacrificial lamb or a scapegoat, but that's about as far as it goes. So to your question, which is a very good one, we're going down a road that we've never really been down before because we have people in power who really don't understand the real world. They understand part of it. They're quite ruthless. They're very clever, in some cases too clever by half. But ultimately, they've bitten off more than they can chew, and they don't realize that yet. They, many of them, will be protected from all of this because, well, frankly, they're from the world of privilege. It's the ordinary people in this country who are going to be caught up in this, who are going to see, just to cite one example, their electricity bills go through the roof, even though the United States has abundant resources of energy. We're throwing all of that away. After finally becoming free of dependence on Middle Eastern oil and becoming energy independent, and now the Biden administration, in its infinite wisdom, is making the United States dependent on China for its industry because for its energy, because that's where it is China that has control over all the mineral resources that go into wind turbines, and solar panels. So we've exchanged one dependency for another. And China is, believe me, a far more potent geopolitical rival than the Middle East ever was. So this is the kind of, you know, they haven't thought the thing through. They don't care. Remember, some of the powerful people in the country, think of Silicon Valley's very cozy relationship with China. Well, they're not going to raise a stink about this. They're still making out like bandits. They're lining their pockets, and they're supporting the policies like 30 by 30. They love wind and solar, and they frankly don't care that when the bill comes due, it's going to be largely presented to people of middle and lower incomes, while the elites more or less walk away from this. That's the sad reality I fear we're heading toward.
Well, let me run this little wild idea I have by you. The disaster that we just had in Afghanistan, and it is without question a disaster of immense proportions, but it was not a mistake. I believe that what we did in Afghanistan was payback to China for helping the left win the 2020 election, because they unleashed this pandemic, and that was singularly the major reason why the left won. And I think that what we did in Afghanistan, giving the country to China, not to mention Bagram Air Force Base, was just a thank you to the Chinese.
Yeah, it will be fascinating to see what the Chinese themselves do with the gift that Biden has presented them. We spent 20 years there trying to remake Afghan society and failed spectacularly, beginning with George W. Bush and concluding with Joe Biden. We were never going to remake that society. There was never a nation there to build. We incidentally learned absolutely nothing, zero, nothing, from the mistake that the Soviet Union made when it invaded that godforsaken country in 1979, and after 10 years also left having accomplished absolutely nothing. So it's just amazing how the people who make these geopolitical decisions learn absolutely nothing from the past, and in some cases from the recent past. Well, they're smarter than everybody else, and they know what they're doing, right? Well, we saw that they didn't. Now, China is now going to inherit Afghanistan. How will the Chinese fare there? Afghanistan has, among other things, it has tons of natural resources, rare earths, all sorts of minerals that the Chinese would absolutely love to get their hands on. Because it's not so much the case that the Chinese have these things in their own country, but they control them elsewhere, particularly in Africa. Well, now they have something right next door, and China actually has a small border with Afghanistan. So they could come in try to get possession of these things themselves. It's going to be more difficult than they realize, because they're going to have to be dealing with the same population that we dealt with so spectacularly unsuccessfully.
Yeah, well, you know, we entered Afghanistan on an aggressor basis. China's entering Afghanistan more on a traitor basis, I think.
It's part of their Belt and Road initiative, right?
Entirely different. But still, there are plenty of intelligent people in Afghanistan who are aware that China is highly destructive to their Uyghur minority.
That's exactly right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And they won't sit. I don't think they'll sit and take that lightly. So, yeah, China will have some problems there. But we gave them a gift that...
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Wow. And the crazy thing is countries. You talked about the term transnational. You know, we see all these very rich people who are running the heck out of the capitalist system and smiling, but they're supporting the left. Why are they doing that? My belief is that they want to run the world and not have countries run the world. They want countries to disappear. They want companies to be the supreme leaders.
Yeah, I think that's right. They don't really consider themselves, you know, the British elites don't really consider themselves British. The French elites don't really consider themselves French. God knows the American elites have a great contempt for the United States, and today they make no effort to hide that. When these people gather in Davos, Switzerland, every January for a big confab, they see themselves as citizens of the world, not as citizens of the country in which they reside and in many cases were born. In that rarefied world, and I had the occasion to attend one of those meetings in Davos around 20 years ago, and I covered it for a publication I was working for. They understand each other very well. They understand that particular universe very well, but they really don't understand the world at all. They, in their own way, they're incredibly ignorant. They know how to game the system so that they benefit from it immensely. Yet repeatedly, you see them bite off more than they can chew. It will be fascinating to see where the global elites lead the rest of us, or try to lead the rest of us, in the years to come. These are people who, in many respects, are completely cut off from the real world. They do very well in the professions that they have, particularly if they're high-tech people, or they're media elites, or Hollywood elites, or Wall Street people who pour money into these things, hedge fund people, people like that. And they're, you know, they have benefited immensely from the system that's in place now, to the detriment of the rest of us. How long they will be able to maintain that is something that we simply don't know. Elites do not go quietly and gently into the night. So they're going to do everything they can to hold on to their positions of power. And if you get in their way, believe me, you will be crushed. And one of the interesting
we're going to have to take this up again in chapter 2 whenever that happens, because I'm afraid we're running out of time, Bonner.
Well, it's been enjoyable, even though the subject matter has been deeply depressing. But we have to face the realities that are facing us.
Yeah. Now we're coming to a new American Revolution. I don't have any doubt in my mind,
yep.
And I'm afraid that it's not going to be a happy one.
No, it's we're in for some rough sledding.
Well, yeah. Dr. Cohen, thank you so much for being our guest today on the Conservative Thought Hour.